Welcome everyone to the CineFact Podcast, the podcast where me and some other douchebags talk about film, television, video games, and all of the things we're completely obsessed with. My name's Chris.
And I'm Alex.
And it's been a long ass time since the last episode.
I know. A little too long.
Wasn't the one in June? Because that was when Prometheus came out, right?
Yeah, I think it was. But did we... Honestly, I don't even remember recording one for Prometheus.
That was the last one we did.
I guess that makes sense, considering how I felt about that coming out of it, but... Yeah. It has been... Okay, it's been since June. That's a long-ass time. That's a long-ass time since I've seen a movie that I really wanted to talk about.
Yeah, like... And you've had a pretty good reason to be, like, preoccupied with other stuff, right? Because
yeah.
You've had some personal stuff going on.
Definitely in the middle of the summer, I was trying to film a movie, and I still... The end results of that haven't been finalized yet. We're still not officially done with it, and we're not really sure when we're going to be picking it back up to finish it, because we only had a few scenes left, but I'll see how that goes. Then after that, school started, and same thing with you. And now we've just kind of been distracted, still watching movies, still playing games, but I don't know, just still haven't gotten around to sitting down and recording something, but now we are.
Yeah. So, we've got some stuff to talk about, especially, a really big release that I know everyone in, basically the snobby film world has been dying to talk about, and that is Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master.
Ooh, baby.
That was the latest reaction ever.
I will explain how excited I am for this once we get to there.
Okay, so, New PTA movie, that's always a big deal, especially since his last one was 2007, I think.
Oh my god.
That's a while ago.
Five years. 5 years of waiting.
Yep, 5 years of waiting, and it finally came, and we'll talk about it later. We don't want to spoil anything.
So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, there's some other stuff to talk about, such as some Vigima games and some stuff on VOD that you can watch. We're going to be discussing a VHS, which is the found footage horror anthology that's by a bunch of different directors that you most likely have not heard of. So, because we're hipsters like that.
Most of them I haven't even heard of, but only a few of them I do know. So I'm a little bit of the average Joe with a little bit of film buff nerd in me.
So, yeah, we'll be talking about that. If you want to, Would you think we would talk about spoilers for VHS?
I mean, when it comes to The Master, I'd love to talk about spoilers, but I know that just came out, and I'd like to just be safe and say no spoilers. But with VHS,
it's on VOD, so anyone listening could just rent it on iTunes or whatnot, watch it.
We could. Well, I guess we could start off with VHS by just giving a non-spoiler thing, and then we'll give some spoilers, but not too much.
Yeah, that'll be cool. And there's also some games. You've been playing a lot of downloadable stuff.
I have. I recently came into acquiring the money to finally buy all the parts that I've needed for a gaming PC or a PC that can basically handle all current games that I could possibly play. And I've been wanting to do this for the past 2 years or so, to little avail, but I finally was able to get it since my birthday recently came up, and I was able to get the money I needed. And all I've been doing the past few days has just been playing all these games and catching up with stuff that I bought over the past few years during Steam sales leading up to this. And yeah, it's awesome, to say the least. It's been a lot better experience than some might expect from playing PC games. But one thing I want to say that I love about it is playing in higher resolutions compared to playing on a console, because most games usually run at a sub HD or a 720p resolution, which might not mean a lot to you for a lot of people that might be listening, or for people that don't know too much about resolutions or image quality and stuff like that. But playing at a 1080p resolution, which is higher up than 720p, a higher level of high definition, it just means that you get a clearer image with a sharper picture, and colors will pop more. And boy, do they pop when I'm playing something like Torchlight 2, or they have a lot of different enemy effects that are various colors, blue, orange, green, and whatnot, and they just really pop on the screen and really look great. It's a noticeable difference. It's not That and playing at 60 frames per second, which is very
Ooh,
fluid.
60 frames per
Which
second. I
I think you got a taste of that when you played Max Payne 2.
Oh yeah,
And
definitely. That I think that was like that and the first Max Payne were the only games I could think of that really went like as smoothly as humanly possible.
that was probably one of my first times that I've ever experienced 60 frames per second, and I can actually like point it out. I can see it. It just looks unnatural the first time you start playing with it because it's not what you're used to at all. And once you get used to it, it's hard to go back to 30 frames per second, I mean, yeah. But you deal with it, yeah. So yeah, PC gaming is fun, and I played a game called Tiny and Big, Grandpa's Leftovers, which is an indie game on Steam, which you've most likely never heard of. I don't know anybody that's ever really played it or have
I
heard
have
it or
never
has
heard of it.
heard it before. It came out earlier this year in the summer, and there's really not much to say about it story-wise, except for you play as this really weirdly designed kid with goggles and a crazy Ghostbusters-esque backpack, and he is trying to search and defeat this guy that happens to have acquired these magical underpants, these magical pair underwear that he wears over on the top of his head, and it gives him magical abilities of telekinesis, like he's able to lift up rocks and throw at you and various things that could harm the balance of the universe. And
I'm already liking the sound of this. Magical underwear. Love it.
you are tasked as this kid who has this crazy backpack that allows you to shape the world around you with the various physics. This is a physics-based platformer where you can slice things in half, you could grab a hook and swing them or push them from side to side, and you also have these rockets that you can deploy where they latch onto an object and you press the mouse key button again and they start shooting off, and it's all physics-based. So whenever your tasks or whenever you're like put into an environment where there's giant rocks and let's say you have to climb up these hills and reach a certain point, you have to align these rocks or cut them so that pieces will fall off and slide off at like a diagonal angle so they create like a ramp for you and things like that. So a lot of the game is very short, which is something that I really like in games where if you can keep something very high quality and not feel like you're padding it out or it's going on too long, which Tiny and Big is very good at, then I would rather a game be 2 hours rather than just 8 hours of padding. And the game is very good at like going from level to level and keeping things very fresh and keeping the variety keeping going and everything. Like it'll range from puzzles like what I just mentioned before of creating a ramp, or other ones where you're tasked into this area where you're trying to reach the top of a giant cube, and what you have to do is cut off these wooden planks at a diagonal angle so you're creating staircases for yourself, but also watching out for the pieces that are falling off from the cube just so they don't crush you or anything like that. And it's very fun. It's a simple game on surface value, but just using the tools just feels really satisfying, and I had a really fun time doing it. And it was very hard to put it down, even though the game was about 2 to 3 hours long. But it has nice music. It has a really unique, distinct visual aesthetic that really keeps going throughout the entire time. It never uses dialogue, but it's always trying to be pretty humorous with its dialogue, even though I never thought it was too funny, but it never takes itself seriously, and that's what I had a good time enjoying. It's only like $10 or so, I believe, on Steam, and
Perfect
usually,
for a 2 hour game.
yeah, I ended up getting it for like $5 or so during the Steam summer sale, and I can't highly recommend it more. It's probably one of the most fun times I've had this year, surprisingly. I remember, like, I thought it was going to be a good game. I remember seeing a lot of it from videos or streams, and I thought it would be a fun game to play, but I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it, and I really recommend it.
Cool. So, is it my turn? You don't have any more
Oh
stuff
yeah,
to
I'm
talk
done.
about?
Yeah. I mean, I could talk about Borderlands 2 and Torchlight 2, but I feel like we'll get to that next week or something like that, once I've dived more into the game. So yeah, I'll
Oh,
let you.
okay. Yeah, you have to give it time because those are long ass games.
Very long games.
Yeah, and meanwhile, I play a game that's actually pretty short. You've probably heard of it. It's called Spec Ops: The Line, and basically, the gist is that it's essentially the thing is this game kind of bombed in like the sales department because
So you say I
what?
probably haven't heard of it. So you could say I probably haven't heard of it. So please, Chris, explain to me what is Spec Ops The Line and why should I be wanting to play it?
Okay, like the reason why it's kind of bombs is because like it's been It's been kind of marketed as a your standard military shooter, which like the industry is oversaturated with military shooters all the time, basically. So like you see, oh, another military shooter. Why should I play this when I have Call of Duty and Battlefield? So no one bought it. And then you actually play the game and you realize that this game is like so much more than you could have possibly perceived. It starts out being about it takes place in Dubai, and basically the gist is Dubai has been hit by these incredible sandstorms. Like half of the city is covered in sand. Even like the incredibly tall skyscrapers, they would be like half covered in sand. It's that bad. Because of this, there's been a huge evacuation plan going on, and this guy named Colonel John Conrad, who by the way is a reference to Joseph Conrad, who's the author of Heart of Darkness, which inspired Apocalypse Now, which is one of the main influences of Spec Ops: The Line. Anyway, Colonel John Conrad, yeah, it's with a K, not a C. John Conrad goes in and he leads an evacuation squad called the 33rd to go in and rescue the people, and he basically disappears for 7 months or so. And then, like, what much later, there's a distress signal that goes on that says that the evacuation failed and they need help getting out. And then, basically, this Delta team, in which you're the main character of, and two other AI squad mates that help you out, basically they're going in to retrieve John Conrad, which is like, it's kind of the same plot as Apocalypse Now, only like there are a lot of differences that I can name, except it would be kind of spoiling it, because if you've seen Apocalypse Now, you know, like you could kind of guess that something is up with John Conrad, and he probably doesn't mean what he says he does, because the whole thing with Apocalypse Now is that it turned out he was actually doing this whole thing with the natives of Vietnam and whatnot. And when you go to Spec Ops, you realize that unlike most military shooters, the main enemies are actually rogue American soldiers rather than like Arabs or Russians or whatever the big punching bag of military shooters are. So
Usually
instead,
Russians. Keep that in
yeah.
mind. Usually Russians.
Yeah, mostly Russians. There's actually been like not as many Arabs this time around, which is nice. But still, Russians, they've been kind of the big beating point in this industry right now, which is really weird because the Cold War ended a long time ago, guys. We should stop. But
We're trying to start something up again, but video games are our nuclear bomb. That's how we're going to start things up. Just watch out. World War III is going to be started because of our hatred of Russians in our video games. It's all 'cause
pretty
of Call of
much,
Duty.
pretty much what will happen is a Russian guy will make Call of Duty their own version of Call. It's a bad analogy anyway. So anyway,
Just scrap it entirely. So continue.
so Spec Ops. It's really hard to describe what makes this game good because the thing is, the gameplay is intentionally like something's off about it, and that's kind of like the point, and you think, well, that's stupid, why would anyone do that? And it's because that would be kind of giving away some of the surprise, but I'll give you like a brief hint, and let's just say that the main character that you play as, his name is Captain Martin Walker, I think. Martin Walker. So Walker, there's something wrong with Walker. There's something obviously wrong with Walker, and you kind of like pick up hints of it at first, but then as the game progresses, you sort of start to see that, yeah, something is really not right with him. Especially since, like, you're playing as him and you start to see firsthand the effects from his perspective. So, and basically, the whole thing about the game is it's almost like a critique of all of those shooters that you see before, because a lot of modern military shooters are actually kind of immoral if you think about it. Just like the amount of people that you kill just for the sake of like being the hero and whatnot, and like without acknowledging some of like the finer details that are going on in the background, and it's very jingoistic and America, fuck yeah, that sort of thing.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in this one, everything about this is so gray to the point that like you'll begin to question whether you're on the right side or not. So, and the game is really devious with how it plays with your own perception of right and wrong by having these moral dilemmas. And like moral choice systems in most video games, like we've seen them all before, like especially with the Mass Effect games, because like all of those games, what they have is like the dialogue tree So you'll basically be doing your actions basically through a menu. And there'll be very rare times in video games where you'll actually have a choice, and usually it's just, oh, go to the left door or to the right door, and that will pick which ending you get, basically. And Spec Ops, it's really, really good with incorporating mechanics to the actual choice systems. Like, basically, there's this point in the game where you have to choose whether. Oh God, I'm gonna spoil something. I'm not gonna
Don't
spoil.
spoil, don't spoil.
I'm
Because
not gonna.
I still have yet to play it. I'd love to play it and find out the stuff on my own. Because I've been very lucky at being
Okay,
not spoiled yet.
here's a not so spoilery thing. There's a point in the game where John Conrad, the colonel, he's basically hung two bodies over a bridge. One is a guy who stole water from a camp, and the other guy, he murdered the thieves' family and whatnot, and you basically have to choose which one should die, basically. Otherwise, he's gonna shoot both of them. And you have to choose whether, like, the thief should die or the murderer should die. So what happens is you'd think you know like what it is. You'd basically pick like if you'd shoot this guy or that guy, but then you can actually think creatively with these choices because what I did was I essentially decided, screw this, I'm gonna try shooting the snipers and see if I could save both of them. And it didn't work, but at the very least I got to be flexible with my choices. And I actually saw some stuff on forums and whatnot saying that some people actually tried to shoot the ropes off from the hanging people. So, like, little touches like that actually make it feel more flexible and more realistic, actually. And it actually makes the choices even tougher because there's a whole bunch of factors that you wouldn't have even thought of. Like, there's this one choice that's very late in the game, and when I acted upon it, I felt like crap because I did something terrible. Because I thought, oh, there was no choice I could do it because it's a video game and you're supposed to do this thing. But apparently, you're able to do something entirely different that averted it that didn't even cross my mind. So there's. It
I
really
also
plays with
I
how game mechanics work.
well I have a question because it sounds like the game doesn't really give you a, and this is something that I had in, this is similar to my complaint with the whole gameplay aspect of it, but it sounds like in regards to that kind of choice of whether or not you want to shoot a body or shoot like the rope that's hanging them from it and you could free it that way, it sounds like the game doesn't really point, maybe not point out, but try to present those options to you well.
No, it doesn't. It forces you to actually think about it and unlearn a sort of like the linearity of the choices in most games.
And I can understand that because I like that, but at the same time, I also feel like it's both a good thing in terms of trying to stretch your perceptions of what a video game would normally do and what it can do or what it normally does. And it's also a bad thing in terms of game design because a game like this should be able to present its options to a player, hopefully not as showy as possible. Like, okay, we're going to highlight it in a yellow light around it. Like, we're saying, oh, this is the holy section of options. You should be choosing this specifically or choosing this specifically. But I feel like it should be trying to show you your options.
No, well,
Because
I
there's
think.
going to be a lot of instances with players where they're maybe playing the game and that's not even going to cross their mind because they might think that, okay, maybe if I shoot like a pole or part of the bridge that it's connected to, that's not always going to work because just a lot of games don't have that completely open sense of destruction or something like that. Like, let's say if I'm playing Battlefield, like I can blow up an entire building. There's going to be sections of that building that I can't blow up, but you figure that out through like repeatedly blowing up multiple buildings and realizing, okay, I can't blow up the pillars that are holding up the building because that's just limitations.
So you're basically saying like you're.
So I'm saying at the same time that both that's like an interesting choice to do that. That's kind of a good thing, and at the same time, it's also kind of a bad thing in terms of game design because I mean,
Well,
there's.
I actually think that like because I also think that what Spec Ops is doing, it's also commenting on the nature of like game mechanics. Like The thing is, I can't really give away much
Because
because
it
if
was
I
a
because
lot of
there's this
discussion.
one final there's this one line in the last game, in the final moments of the game, in the final part, that perfectly summarizes what the game is trying to do, but of course I can't really give it away. But what I there is this one have you ever heard of the series Extra Credits on the
Yeah,
internet?
but I sadly, I guess I have heard of it, and I think I've watched an episode or two, but I have not dived
Well, they
fully.
did this special Spec Ops segment, and in one of their analyses, they actually pointed out like the reason why the gameplay is the way it is, because it's kind of there to kind of highlight the gamey aspects of it and how like turning all of how turning all of this chaos and all of this immorality into a game is actually kind of wrong and immoral, and by doing that, what they did was they actually made the game design even more archaic, like 2006 archaic, where like there's even it gets to the point where there are red barrels lying around, and if you shoot them, they blow up. It's that sort
But
of thing.
those are just like classic video game cues, which isn't really a bad thing because plenty of games still do that, or
Yeah,
they'll
but the thing
highlight a
is,
barrel
you've
in a
never, you
specific
don't
spot.
really see much of that in modern military shooters, and even in stuff like maybe Battlefield, it's usually done in a way that's like only for like destruction of environment rather than for killing other players. And the way like Spec Ops does that, it's there to kind of highlight that something is really off with the world that's going on, and the thing is, you know, I can't give away too much, and that's the problem, but you. I urge people to try it out because even if you do have some reservations, this is probably going to be a really important game to the industry as the years pass. It'll probably go down in history as something that really pushes narrative and video games forward, and more people should support that.
And I'm fully willing to support it. That's why I'm still interested in playing it. It's just a lot of the gameplay stuff, at least from what I was talking earlier to you about, not on the show, but from what I would play, what I had played earlier, at least from the demo on Xbox, is that when I'm playing the game, I don't feel like it plays well and it doesn't feel good to play. Which, I mean, yes, you could say that that's what they were going for, but that's also bad in terms of it being an actual video game.
Well, I
Not even talking
it's
about it being like arcadey and everything, but it just, there are games out there that developers put a lot of time into to make it feel right or feel good within its universe. But this is an instance where it could play and feel good as a shooter, but this one feels arcadey, but it feels arcadey in a bad way. And
Yeah,
that it just.
you have to play it to kind of understand what I mean. You have to like actually play through all of it in order to kind of get what they're hinting at.
I
But
guess, but that could also mean, or that could also be a sign of why it bombed, because usually when a demo is released of a game, that can definitely help sales.
well,
It
yeah,
helps
of
sales for a
course
lot
that's
of those
why it's
people that I
bombed,
know.
because the thing
And
is,
yeah,
everyone expects polish in a game, and like what this game is doing is totally different, and it kind of forces you to rethink like how gameplay is supposed to be treated. So, and this is
I mean,
definitely a narrative over gameplay sort of thing, so I think it works on
let
that
alone the
spec.
fact that it didn't really get much marketing at all, but the demo itself was a very poor first impression. And that's, I mean,
Well, the thing with the demo is it
that
doesn't
was a
really want
shame.
to give away some of the surprises in the game, and it
I
really
think
tries hard
it
at that.
hints at that. I think it leads into it, or it hints at that. So I mean, you can get an
There's a
idea of
little
it.
hint.
It's just sad that the little bit you get of it doesn't really play well, I feel, in terms of the gameplay, because it only focuses on the gameplay in the demo that I played. It has like a little video montage at the very end of it that plays off of on stuff that you'll be seeing later on in the game, and I could see why that might interest people, but they might not want to get all the way through said demo because they're not enjoying the game.
Yeah, this game is not for the faint of heart because the thing is, this game is it's the sort of game kind of like Silent Hill 2 that gleefully embraces kicking the player in the teeth and making them feel like total shit when they're playing them. Like when I was done playing this game, it got so emotionally intense that I kind of felt like taking a shower once it was all over. It got that bad, and I feel like the gameplay, like kind of highlighting the sloppiness and the ugliness of war through the combat, kind of elevated it in that way. Like if you like think of it in a way that's outside of your normal like video game gaming like perspective and actually see it as like its own thing, then you actually kind of start to see like how it all falls into place.
All right, well, that's the, I mean, I will say again that I definitely want to play it, and I'll see what it's like when I get my hands on it. I know I'll definitely be interested in the story, but I'm still very hesitant when it comes to the actual playing of
Oh my
said
God,
game.
the ending is insane. I implore everyone to play it if they think of video games as an art form. So I guess we're done with games, right?
Yeah, all right. So Spec Ops: The Line, you highly recommend it.
I highly recommend it. It's probably my top three of the year so far.
Great. That makes you want to play it more then.
Oh yeah,
Although
I want to replay it just
you've
to
missed out on
get the
quite a
other end.
few games too, sadly. But I know that saying that a game is going to change the industry, or you think it will or should, that's definitely high regards. So yeah, I'm definitely going to seek out to try to play it at some point.
Yeah,
So
check.
yes.
Okay, so what are we going to talk about first?
I'm fine with VHS.
Okay,
Lead
that'll be
it off
cool.
with
Like,
a.
we'll save the heavy stuff for later. But
Oh yeah.
so yeah, VHS, it's on video on demand. You can access that through like your cable box or iTunes or your Xbox or your PS3 or whatever. So you actually have a chance of watching that first before you listen to this podcast. How's that?
That sounds fine. I still think we should probably describe the movie in not spoilery fashion, and then we can
Yeah, at
after.
first. We'll go into spoilers later for like the few people who like don't really like VOD or whatever reason they have,
By
but
the way, that's video on demand. I never really hear it as VOD too much, but yeah.
don't know.
But just so that people actually know our opinions of the movie rather than having to be spoiled by it.
Yeah. So
So
anyway,
yeah.
you saw this at Sundance, you
I
lucky
did.
bastard.
I know. I get to see it before most people did in America. And boy, was it awesome because I got to see something that I feel like not many people got to see. And this was something that I could just spread the word of mouth around for people that I know would be interested in horror movies, like Chris here, because he loves a good horror movie.
Love it.
And I got to see this knowing that it was going to be an anthology film, and there haven't been very many anthology films that have come out in recent memory that focus on horror, and let alone good ones. But this one caught me completely by surprise because I know I was interested in it because I know Joe Swanberg, who had done Nights and Weekends, I believe, and
I actually haven't seen
he's
that.
done a lot of mumblecore films. And then T. West, who directed The House of the Devil, and then The Innkeepers, which I believe came out this year. And I don't think I'm familiar with anybody else that directed any of the other short
Yep.
films on this list. So VHS is just a anthology collection of six short films, I believe,
Yeah,
including
done in the found footage format, no less.
done in the found footage format with one wraparound film. And there's really no context outside of a bunch of jackass rule breakers that just love to break whatever shit they can possibly find. They break into this house and they find a room with a dead guy sitting on a chair, and he's in front of this TV with static playing on it, and they see a bunch of these VHS tapes that are stacked on top of the TV. And while the other guys are roaming around the house seeing whatever else they can try to find and steal, one of the guys decides to pop in one of the VHS tapes and he starts watching them, and he watches all of the short films back to back. And keep in mind, a suspension of disbelief is definitely required with this movie
Yes.
because there all these VHS tapes are captured in various different formats, whether it be through an actual VHS video camera or digital VHS camera, but also there is one short film that takes place solely through a webcam chat. Let's say if I was talking on Skype with somebody, it's all through one main video and then one picture in picture of another person talking to another person. And yeah, it wouldn't make very much sense if you're watching them on a VHS tape. So suspension of disbelief is definitely
Yeah,
required. So
also, there's also the age-old question of, oh, is there a logical reason for why they would keep shooting or why they would be holding a camera in this situation? That is always brought up, and I kind of like to think of this anthology as less of like, oh, you should take this at face value, and more of like, it's an exercise in style, basically.
yes.
So you should just like
You should
accept it
really
as
just have
that.
fun with this movie. Yeah, you should just learn to have fun with the movie
Just
and just
accept it
kind of
for
think.
what it is, and what it is found footage. So there.
So the first short film in the bunch is, and excuse me because I don't know names, but it's about a would you what would you call what would okay so it's about a bunch of guys that find out that they have a buddy that has a pair of glasses that
Spy glasses,
also
I
has
think that's
a
what they're
video camera
called.
or spy glasses with a video camera that's attached to it, but it's also very inconspicuous, so you can't actually tell that there's a video camera attached to these pair of glasses. So a bunch of these college guys, along with this one nerdy looking kid that has a pair of glasses that are the
They
spy
do
glasses.
what any group of heterosexual men would do with spy glasses, capture tits with them.
Of course. So they go out to a bar and they start talking to whoever chick they can possibly find. And one chick they find in it is a little weird. She acts a little bit funky. She has this crazy scar that's going vertically from her forehead, from the top of her forehead down to her eyes, and it she comes off as acting very weird, but she's very fixed, very transfixed on this one guy with his glasses. And what leads is a bunch of these college guys take a bunch of these girls that they find, including the weird-looking girl. They go out to this hotel, and craziness ensues. And the next short film is about two people or two a couple
A
of a man
couple, yeah.
and women that decide to go backpacking out in the middle of Colorado, I think.
Grand Canyon, basically,
Grand
around
Canyon.
that area.
So they go out backpacking out in the middle of the Grand Canyon, and they visit various little shops and I think small amusement parks. I don't remember what it was specifically because it's been many months. And then they end up going out and staying at a motel where the film captures day and night back and forth, similar to Paranormal Activity. And they find out that there's this one girl that happens to be passing by the motel. She stops by their motel room, asks if she can get a ride out in the middle of the night to a different location, which seems a little bit weird to the guy. And then other things ensue revolving around a home invasion. The third short film
Technically a
happens.
motel room invasion, not a home
Hotel room.
invasion.
You
Yeah, I'm a
but
pedant like that.
you know what I mean. So the third short film happens to focus on a bunch of another batch of college kids as they're backpacking out in the middle of the woods, and they're planning on staying out in these woods that are known to be
Killing
there's
fields, basically.
a myth that goes around that there happens to be a bunch of deaths that have taken place in these woods where people have gone in but they haven't come back out. So these college kids decides to go about these woods, try to search it, see if they can find anything, and generally just to have fun. One happens to be the horny teenage girl, one happens to be the horny teenage guy, one happens to be the stoner girl, and one happens to be the girl that seems to know a little bit too much about this myth, about these woods. And then other craziness happens regarding around a myth going.
Simply put, craziness happens in every single short.
Of course.
Yes,
The
as they always do.
fourth short film happens to take place in the webcam chat, which I happened to bring up before, about a girl who thinks she's seeing ghosts in her house. So she seeks out the help of her boyfriend through a webcam chat as he's watching in as she waits in the middle of the night to see if they hear any bump in the night. Fifth short film happens to take place as a bunch of guys are going to meet at this Halloween party. They don't know exactly where this Halloween party is taking place, but they know it's taking place inside of a house. So they find this house where they think the party is taking place, and they go inside, try to see where everybody else is. They're all dressed up in their Halloween getup and everything in various costumes, but no one seems to be inside this mansion. As they start searching around the place, they see that this mansion does not appear to be a normal mansion. Things are going on in this mansion, various haunted house things start to occur, and voila, that's VHS.
Craziness ex ensues, pretty much.
So, Chris, what do you think of VHS? You happen to see it a little bit later than I did. You got to see it
On demand, basically.
on yes.
Like everyone else, hopefully.
Yeah.
It like all anthologies, it's like, a hit or miss thing, but the thing is, it's the type of anthology where it's mostly hits, basically. And there's not a single short in this anthology that I would call bad. There's some that I would say like are maybe weaker than the others, but overall, I was surprised by how like mostly consistent this anthology is because like they all seem to like get a general grasp of what makes the found footage technique so effective when done right. And a lot of them have like their own clever twists on like usual like found footage formulas, and I dug the hell out of it. There's some great stuff in this thing, and like
I
some of them is
wholeheartedly
really
agree. I loved it walking out of the theater when I got to see it at Sundance, and I
like
couldn't wait to tell everybody
here's
about
my main complaint though. You got to see it with a cool crowd, basically a Sundance crowd, and I basically saw it alone in my TV room, basically
it.
in
And
the dark.
it's definitely a movie that plays really well with a crowd, especially with a crowd that doesn't really know entirely what they're getting into.
Yeah, basically, like this is a good like Paranormal Activity type crowd, basically, where like
Yes.
everyone starts like screaming and really engaging and reacting to what's going on screen.
It's definitely good at playing with your expectations, and it's definitely good about playing with sound. And this is a movie that I highly implore people, whether or not they're watching it on a TV or if they're watching in a theater, you got to play with the sound up, and it really helps get you into that experience. But I agree with you, especially with it all being, I mean, in my opinion, I feel like it's all hit. I feel like all of the short films hit tremendously well, some less as tremendously well as others, but I can't help but really just say
Just
how much I
embrace
loved
all of them.
and embraced it. Yes. I feel like all the short films are really good at hitting these various different horror genres and hitting all these different phobias that people have and just really trying to exploit those as much as they can to get as many of the scares that they possibly can out of it. And I just had a blast with it. I know that my favorite that I told you about before was the woods one, which is the backpacking out in the woods and everything.
Yeah.
I feel like it definitely tries to use that found footage genre to its most clever use that I've ever seen before, and it uses it very well, and I really liked how it was implemented, and I can't say how much I loved it enough. I liked all of them, and I know that you definitely love.
Love
Please
the
tell me which
majority, basically.
one. The majority, but which one did you love the most?
My favorite one was definitely the final one, and it was like the most perfect way to really like cap off the anthology. And it was basically the one with the Halloween party and they find the spooky mansion, because I feel like that one has the best grasp on like a consistency and like building things up, and it has the best pacing out of all of them.
It's definitely one that just keeps going and going and going, and it's really
Yeah, like
exciting.
once it gets going, like it doesn't stop. And like the thing is, one of the main problems that a lot of people have with the Paranormal Activity series and a lot of other found footage movies is it'll be like scary moment and then plot development, scary moment, plot development, and it'll keep switching back and forth. Whereas in this one, like it's just like some plot development in the beginning, then all of a sudden scary shit happens and scary shit happens, and it just keeps building off it until it just gets completely insane and it leads to this incredible finale that's loud and just screams everywhere of terror. And it was really, really fantastic, and it really got under my skin because I'm a sucker for like a haunted anything, mansion, asylum, I don't care. I'm always a sucker for that sort of thing, and it really got under my skin.
And you could
And
say that that's similar to why I love the Wood one or the third short film so much as well, because I grew up on like watching Friday the 13th and stuff, and I'm a sucker for watching a really good
a slasher.
middle of the woods slasher film. Exactly. And that one just really appealed to me a lot because I haven't seen anything like that before. And I think a lot of the short films do a lot of really creative
Yeah,
things
like
with
if
their
you're going to
concept.
have like a slasher for your found footage movie, like the slasher that they use in the woods short is probably the most perfect one that you could use for the found footage, because it really does emphasize the use of the camera.
Yes.
And can we give it away right now?
Yeah, you can. It's based. The killer of the third short film is all just these camera glitches. That's how they see it. Otherwise, they don't see anything
Yeah,
that's
they
happening. The
basically
only way you
can't
could
see
see
it
the
with their
killer is,
eyes. You can
yes,
only see
you
it
can
through the
only see it
glitches on the camera.
through glitches and hitches in the camera when it's recording. So when anything's going down, when it's like calm and serene and everything, even if people are freaking out, you don't know where the killer is. He seems fine, but once you start hearing some glitches, some little static, you know he's nearby. And that's how it keeps getting you really tense. And I
It
love that
it's
because
actually
it's
kind of
also a
like
loud
Slender Man
sound.
in that regard.
A little bit, yeah. I can agree with that. It's definitely like a myth where you normally don't see him until right then, and then he gets you.
Yeah, basically, like, yeah, it's that sort of thing where, like, once you see him, like, he's just gonna keep coming at you until you're dead. That sort of thing. And another one, like, I think the one that has the best plot, if you can call it that, is the webcam one, because that one actually has, like, somewhat of an arc and a cool little twist at the end.
It does, yes, I agree with that too.
It's
Also, it
the
really gets under.
weirdest one as well.
It's the weirdest one because it really gets under my skin, because it's definitely a movie that really likes to emphasize on body horror. And body horror is something that
Especially
really
at
just
the
bothers me
final, like,
immensely.
there are like two main moments of body horror in that one, and like anyone who like hates like basically openings in anyone's body should like basically cover their eyes throughout this whole thing
Yeah.
because some of it gets really insane.
Let alone that it's one that's also really likes to use what is it? Shock horror, whatever it is.
Yeah, like
I
there's a
forget the
lot of
term.
jump scares because
Think of
it's not
there's
just
I jump
body
scares. I don't know
horror.
why I said shocker. There's a lot of jump scares regarding around it being like a ghost story and everything, and it uses that as much as it possibly can. But once it starts using some of the body horror, which is very few, but it uses it really effectively. It gets under your skin.
It just
Her.
nails that like
No
great
pun
level of
intended.
grossness, and it uses practical effects very well. And it also leads up to that like one twist that I mentioned. That's just like it's so bizarre and weird, and I can't imagine
Yeah.
how he even thought of that as like a practical way to end it. But I have to commend him because I never really could have expected something that batshit, basically.
And it was a similar experience in the theater as was the and there is a twist ending at the second short film, which is the backpacking out in the middle of the Grand Canyons. That one also happens to have a twist ending that
Yeah,
plays with
that one
because
like
it just
is not
it kind of
strong.
It's not nearly as strong, but it's one of those that just kind of catches you off guard because it wasn't really your first thought
Yeah, because the
going
thing is
into
like,
it
and the thing
coming
is
in.
they go through it very quickly. It's just like
Yes.
the final 30 seconds of it is just that kind of reveal, and then you're just thinking, "Wait, what?" And then it's over. So you don't really have time to process it because you have to go to the next short.
But the twist in the webcam one definitely sticks around for a little bit longer, and it is very bizarre because it's just something you did not expect coming from this. It never really crossed your mind. However, it also makes sense because a certain actor likes to act a little weirdly in regarding to the whole situation. Or not
Yeah,
weird,
like
but
basically
he seems very distant.
there's like this one moment where I don't want to say it, but something very gross happens, and the guy on the other end of the web chat, he's basically going like, "Oh, you should probably stop doing that." And he acts like very nonchalant about like, "Dude, what are you talking about?" And then all of a sudden, the pieces start to come together as to like why this is happening, why this guy is acting this way. And it's really cool how it all like kind of converges into this thing. And it does it in a short amount of time too, which is really cool. Like the way they're able to explain it through just like very short amount of time is really efficient.
Which is a really nice thing for all the short films, with them being short films, that if they use some kind of gimmick for their horror or something that just doesn't really play well, if they were to extend it out to like an hour and a half horror movie, that it works a lot better once you condense it into a very small time frame. And that's why, I mean, if I was to watch each of these short films and they were extended out to a full length feature film length, yeah, they probably wouldn't work nearly as well as they do with short films. But as they are, I liked all of them a lot.
Yeah, if there's one short that I think gets the closest to badness, that would be the wraparound, which is basically the
Yeah.
thing that like brings all of them together. And because the thing is with that one, I was actually kind of interested in it at first because I wasn't expecting a wraparound and I wasn't expecting it to actually kind of have a plot basically, and I was like, "Oh, this is actually pretty cool that they're doing this." And there are a few like creepy moments as it's building up as well. So I was kind of interested in seeing where it would end up. And then it ends in the most generic possible way.
It leads into a whole lot of nothing.
It just leads to
Is how
nothing.
I
Like,
felt.
not only is it generic, it's just badly executed. Like, it kind of ends in a wet fart, basically, is the best word I could come up with. It's a wet fart.
Which is sad because that's how they end the movie. The final short film that you love, the one that's the Haunted Mansion, isn't necessarily the exact end of the movie, but
Actually,
it's
was it
what you
the
could say.
exact end?
No, because the final, I mean,
It was maybe
the
the
ending is
Sundance cut was different. See,
Because technically the wraparound was the ending for me. The wraparound, oh, I didn't even think about that. Because I'm playing the unaltered version and the Sundance Theater, and you got the actual, like, distributor edited possible
literally
one.
the final frame was the final frame of the Halloween one. Was it
So,
for you?
from what, maybe it was the Halloween one. I don't remember.
And then they went to the end credits where it showed the montage that was on this bad remix thing that sounded
I barely
like
remember.
atrocious, honestly.
I'm trying to remember. This might be a little bit of spoiler stuff that we'll start talking about for the next like couple minutes, but yeah, our basic thoughts of VHS was I loved it. Chris really enjoyed it. We all had a good time. Check it out. It should be
See it
coming
with
out in
a crowd.
theaters.
See it with friends, drunk buddies.
It should be coming out in theaters either late this month or it might have already come out, I don't know. But I think it comes out at the beginning of October. So definitely look that out if it comes near a theater you, because
See
I
it at a midnight screening. That shit'll be fun.
especially, yeah. Okay, so back to ending spoilers. I think that the ending for me, I mean, I might rem not remember because it's been so long. It's been about 8 months. I thought it was that the guy puts in the final tape. And then that ends, and then the guy gets up, I think, and then he realizes that the guy in the chair isn't there. Or no, he doesn't realize, but the audience realizes it because he walks away to find the other guys as they're fiddling around in that room with the tapes and stuff. And when he gets up, that's like a cue for the audience where they see that the dead guy on the sofa chair isn't there anymore, and he's actually alive. And that's when the guys are fiddling around with stuff, and
They
the
can argue with alive,
person's,
but yeah.
well, you know what I mean, yeah.
He's up and about.
And then they realize that he's there, and then everyone starts freaking out, and then they all die, and then I think that's when it ends for me. I could be wrong. It could have been that they all die, and then it cuts to the final short film, but I
Yeah,
don't
that's how
remember.
it was for me. They all die, and then it goes to the final short film, then end credits, basically.
Okay.
So who knows? Maybe you kind of forgot. Maybe there actually were two different cuts that are like kind of different in how they wrap things up. Because maybe they probably realized that the ending of the wraparound was very unsatisfying, so they decided to end it
It
with.
might have, and I might have just been completely wrong, but it's like I said, it's been a while, so I don't really remember, but I feel like that's how it ended, so that could totally be the way I changed it, so I wouldn't be surprised
If anyone else
since
has been on Sundance, you should probably let us know through a comment or something.
some kind of fan feedback would
That'd
be
be
nice.
nice.
That's a good question. That bothers me. Oh well. So now after we're done talking about VHS, we can move on to the next film. So please, Chris, you are far better than I am at explaining a movie. So please, what is the next movie we're watching and what is it about?
Oh boy. We already discussed that, a new Paul Thomas Anderson movie is always a big deal because I wouldn't say he's like very slow with his releases, but it's definitely like not terribly frequent in the same way that,
He
say,
takes
David
his
Fincher
time in between
is.
films. He definitely takes his time.
Yeah. It's not
Yeah.
like Terrence Malick levels of time, but it's a while, basically. And basically his newest film is the very hyped about The Master, which is basically it's a period piece taking place in the 1950s that stars Joaquin Phoenix as a man named Freddie Quell. Freddie Quell is a World War II veteran who has an insane drinking problem and a raging libido. Basically, all he could think about is basically booze and pussy. So what happens is he accidentally kills a man through one of his special moonshines that he creates, which the special ingredient of which is something I don't want to give away, but it's insane. So basically he accidentally kills a man with that and he ends up running away to this boat, and like everyone in the boat is lively and happy and dancing, so he decides, hey, this is a good place to crash. In there he ends up entangling with this cult called The Cause, which has been created by a man named Lancaster Dodd, who's played by Philip Seymour Hoffman. So basically, The Cause is this cult that has a lot of alarming similarities to Scientology. Basically, their belief is that you're able to use hypnotherapy to look back at your past lives, and basically, by seeing your past lives, you're able to achieve a state of perfection And they believe that these past lives could go back not just thousands of years, but trillions of years back. So, yeah, crazy stuff going on with them. And the whole movie's about Freddy's assimilation into the group and how, like, there starts to kind of be this friendship and this camaraderie between Freddy and Lancaster. And then it starts to kind of become a rivalry, and a lot of stuff happens, and a lot of really, I can't really even really begin to explain, like, some of the stuff that happens without, like, not just spoiling it, but without kind of realizing how dense it all is. Because the thing is, the thing with this movie and the thing with a lot of, like, Anderson's movies is that, especially his later movies, like There Will Be Blood, is how ambiguous they are. Like, they kind of straddle that line between being very ambiguous with what they are about and what the character motivations are, yet at the same time, they're very detailed and really, really get into the psychological mindsets of their main characters. And I know you are a huge fan of Paul Thomas Anderson, and you
Enormous fan,
absolutely,
yes.
you adore There Will Be Blood, and I adore Punch Drunk Love and a lot of his other films like Magnolia. How did you feel about The Master? Was it everything you could have hoped for a follow-up to There Will Be Blood?
I would say that yes, it was definitely a very satisfying follow-up to There Will Be Blood. It definitely delivered on all of my expectations for it, in a very different way than I was expecting it to. I've been waiting 5 years, 5 years for the follow-up to There Will Be Blood. Because when I saw There Will Be Blood in 2007, and this was around the time that I was getting into film, I was getting into film around the age of 13, and it had been a few years after when I finally got to see There Will Be Blood, and I was watching some, I don't remember if it was after or before, I honestly don't remember. I think it was before I had seen There Will Be Blood that I started trying to catch up on some of his past work, like Boogie Nights and Punch Drunk Love, and I was loving all of his films. There are none of them that I've seen so far that I didn't like, and I sadly haven't seen Magnolia and Heartache, but I've seen the rest of them, and
Oh man, you need to see Magnolia.
I feel I do,
I keep telling you that, but you really do have to see it.
and after I saw There Will Be Blood, which I feel is a masterpiece, that Paul Thomas Anderson is one of the most ambitious, one of the most daring directors out in the field right now, and he is very, very, very amazing, is the best way I can say it. I am a unabashed fanboy of him. I like all of his work, and I can't wait to see what he does next. He is the next Kubrick in my eyes, who is my favorite director as well, and I can't
Yeah,
wait to see.
I
So
won't argue. That's very.
a lot was riding on the master, and a lot was riding on me to love it. And going into it, I was expecting it to be ambiguous. I was expecting it to be dense, like you said, and I was expecting something a little bit different than how There Will Be Blood turned out, and that's exactly what I got. This movie is like, I mean, I wouldn't say it feels exactly the same as There Will Be Blood, which I
But
think Paul
it
Thomas
feels like
Anderson's
a very nice
he's
companion piece.
not really, not I would even disagree with that. But I would say that Paul Thomas Anderson is very good at being a very versatile director, because Boogie Nights is very different from Punch Drunk Love. Punch Drunk Love is very different from There Will Be Blood. Like, There Will Be Blood is like this grand epic, this epic on a big scale that's also a character study of a specific person,
Yeah.
of Daniel Plainview. Punch Drunk Love is this very kind of quiet, very
Yeah,
introverted.
very quite introspective, very stream of consciousness type of filmmaking.
Yeah, and Boogie Nights is almost like a Martin Scorsese rise and fall, rags to riches tale. And The Master is something else entirely. And I keep trying to feel, I'm trying to compare it to something, but it's very hard for me to. I just can't think
And
of what it's
I
like.
think it feels very much like a Kubrick-ish sort of
It
movie.
is. It's kind of like Kubrick in his beginning years when he was doing stuff like Path of Glory and Killer's Kiss,
Like, the thing
where
is,
he
There
was.
Will Be Blood was also kind of Kubrickian, but it was
It
it
was. But
There Will
it
Be
was.
Blood was, felt
It was
more in
near
line
perfect.
with like maybe I'm trying to think of like maybe Eyes Wide Shut
But
and
here,
perhaps
I'll finish what I was
2001.
going to say. But in the beginning years of Kubrick, he was directing a lot of very straightforward films like Killer's Kiss and whatnot. But then once he got to 2001: A Space Odyssey, which I feel like was his first foray into very
Experimental.
experimental filmmaking. Exactly. Experimental filmmaking, where he was trying to stretch the boundaries of narrative and storytelling and whatnot. And after that, he just started creating all these various films that are dense and abstract, just like The Master is, but are very cinematography heavy, very heavy on studying specific characters, are very
Very
not
meticulous.
very meticulous, but not very standard things that would conform to the average film that would come out in a given year or something like that. Something average that would come out in the theaters that would just come and go. It would be something that he took a lot of time on, took a lot of time on trying to create, and it would feel different and stand on its own and be like nothing else. And The Master feels very much like Kubrick's later work. And I think it definitely has a lot of similarities to Eyes Wide Shut in a lot of visuals and a lot of scenes specifically, not in the grand scheme of dealing with marriage and people's sexual drives and everything, somewhat with sexual drives, but not with marriage. But The Master, what can I say? It's such, compared to There I Will Go, which I feel like is very focused and very assured of what it's trying to do. The Master is very assured of what it's trying to do, but it's also
Yeah.
very meandering. I think it's similar to Punch Drunk Love in that it's very meandering.
Yeah,
It's
I feel
very
like it's kind of like a blending of the elements of both Punch Drunk Love and There Will Be Blood. It has that
can
very
see that.
meticulous detail of There Will Be Blood and that ambiguity, but it also has that kind of introspection of Punch Drunk Love, and it also kind of has that kind of very bizarre stream of consciousness-ish sort of thing. Not as strong as Punch Drunk Love, but it takes certain elements from that and melts
And
into its own thing.
it definitely doesn't have this very clear focus on the face value like a lot of his other films do. It definitely just kind of like lingers on in certain scenes. Sometimes he'll just place the camera down and just let these scenes play out as long as they would, as if the actors were ad-libbing at times. And sometimes some of these scenes where it feels like they're ad-libbing turns out to be some of the most compelling, interesting scenes put to film that I've seen in quite some time, if
Yeah, I mean,
ever.
I just gotta say, like, the personal inquiry scene is some of the best acting I've seen in a long ass time.
Are you talking about the processing scene?
The
I think that's what
interview.
you're trying to say. The interview. That was the processing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to get to that in a second, because I'll just say that when I was watching the movie, once it starts the beginning of it, where it's just trying to introduce Freddie Quell and just establish himself as a character, as he's a very quirky guy. He doesn't really like to hang out with very many people. He kind of makes situations with others awkward. You get it from the get-go that he has a raging libido, as you just said. He always has sex on the mind, and it's awkward at first. He definitely is awkward around other people. But something that I feel like I don't think other people have really addressed, and I feel like it'll probably be something that will be. But when I was watching him, it came across to me that he was very mentally challenged in some form or way, aside from having
Like
PTSD.
he has kind
He
of
is.
like some severe form of psychosis in some way.
And I know that they bring it up later on in the movie, where he brings out the fact that his mother was institutionalized and his life has never been the normal 1930s, 40s
But
family. I
like,
don't remember
because
the
at
age.
first you think, oh, maybe it's just post-traumatic stress disorder from the war, and then you get hints that like maybe the war just made it so much worse.
Yeah. Or maybe not just the war, but the fact that his daily interactions with people and the fact that he will drink whatever liquid or chemical he finds, it seems. He just, if he sees it, he picks it up, drinks it, tries to taste it. The fact that his secret ingredient is so wrong. It's just so not what you should be putting inside of a drink to drink somebody. Yet everybody finds it immensely delicious and everybody wants more of it. But he is just a very strange person. And aside from him being possibly mentally challenged, which is never straight, it's never on face value. Like, you're never sure of why he acts the way he is. But he's just a fascinating character. And I gotta hand it to Joaquin Phoenix. When I think of a great performance, I usually think of Charlize Theron in a Monster, which I feel like is a situation where an actor just completely transforms into a character, where it's really hard to try to figure out which one is the actor and which one is the character, and she just absorbs into that role, and I can't see her as Charlie Theron anymore. And it's a role that I always come back to. And Joaquin Phoenix as Freddie Quell is that same kind of performance where he just absorbs himself into this role. He has so many different quirks and mannerisms, and the way he positions himself
Yeah,
and
just
stands,
like
and
the
the
way
way
his
he puts his
face, like basically his
it's
face,
always
like,
something that's.
okay.
But I was just saying the hands on his hips thing. It's just gonna stick with me because I never see people do something like that. But you're right. You can continue. Yeah.
Like just the way his face just looks kind of crooked, like
It's
I,
like he had a stroke on one side, and he's just kind of like
yeah, like,
speaking.
and it, like, you see a lot of close-ups of actually his nostrils sometimes, where it just looks like they're kind of like flaming, like you feel like a bat's gonna come out of his nostrils at any given moment, and it almost looks like one of them is bigger than the other one. Did you notice that? Was I the only one that noticed that?
A little bit. I was more distracted by the fact that he always like opened his mouth on the left side, and he would like have it closed
He
on the other side.
kind
So it
of
was
has
kind
like
of
a
like
sneer.
it's like he's speaking like Popeye the Sailor Man. Oh, good. Kind of like that. That's
That's
kind
the
of how it
best
kind of
analogy.
looked. Yeah. So in the beginning of the movie, when it's establishing his character, it's very it's meandering like a lot of the rest of the movie is, but there's a lot of wide open landscapes. It's very quiet. It's just very kind of establishing shots or very wide open landscapes and everything, which it completely contradicts or is very different with the other half of the movie as soon as he meets Lancaster Dodd, where the first half
It's
of the movie is
almost
very open.
entirely
And
indoors at that point.
yeah, the rest of the movie is very much indoors and is very focused on having these up close shots and everything. And I know a lot of people might not think much of the 70 millimeters and not think of much. I am ashamed that I didn't get to see it in my theater because all of these close up shots, even when it's not in 70 millimeters, it looks really detailed and just it just accentuates these close-up shots so much more. I feel like there's this level of detail that I missed out on, but I still feel like I saw a lot of it. And it's different because with There Will Be Blood cinematography, it's very specific, but there's a lot of wide open landscapes, a lot of long panning, tracking shots and everything. It's all very smooth, very Kubrickian like, all very meticulously shot and organized and everything. But with The Master, I bet it's just as meticulously shot and everything, but it also feels very hazy. It feels very much kind of like I'm watching a movie from the 70s or something like that, but it doesn't really detract from the detail in the face of the or the facial details or the hair or anything. I get to see all of the actors' quirks and mannerisms in their faces I possibly can, and Joaquin Phoenix just uses that immensely to his advantage, and his performance stands out the most to me. I can't wait to see the praise that he's going to get now down the line. But not only Joaquin Phoenix, but Philip Seymour Hoffman is fantastic as Lancaster Dodd. But the biggest
He's everything that a cult leader should be,
exactly.
and that's really important to the narrative that that certain character doesn't fuck up. Because if you don't believe that character, you can't believe the transformation that Freddie Quell has, and Philip Seymour Hoffman just knocks it out of the park with his performance. It's pretty unbelievable.
And their chemistry together when they form like this kind of master and dog relationship is excellent as well. It feels pretty natural. It feels like they have this kind of strange bond that you don't fully understand, but you can strangely see why they have this bond at the same time. It's very hard to describe. But what I was saying before was that the biggest surprise for me was Amy Adams, who I've always thought she was fine. She's always kind of
Like, the
like
thing is, she's always just the charming one.
Yeah, she's never tried to do too much with her roles. She's always just very charming, very likable, just and in some cases, like with the fighter, she's kind of hard, a little distant, but I don't know. None of her performances in the past have really been too great or anything noteworthy. But in this, she just like stood out for me from like immediately.
We've
All
never
these
seen a performance of hers that's like this one.
Yes. She always looks like she's this distressed, downtrodden woman that feels like she has experienced everything and she could break down at every moment. She looks very homely and very much like a mother that has experienced everything, like I said before. It's completely, it's hard It's hard to describe her because I feel like she is the performance in a lot of ways, rather than Joaquin Phoenix, that stood out to me specifically the most, just because I wasn't expecting this from her. She enforces like a lot of just command and a lot of screen presence that she's never done before, especially
Yeah,
with
there.
that one scene where she's yelling in the bedroom when she's yelling after the confrontation with that one guy, John Morris, that's like the dissenter of what Lancaster Dodd believes in, and he's kind of fighting against what they're doing and everything, and he believes that it's more of a cult rather than this ideal or a realization that Lancaster Dodd is trying to show to people, and he's trying to fight against it. And then Amy Adams just completely just blows up in their own room, and she is just fighting against it and trying to yell at Lancaster Dodd, trying to explain why they're doing this and everything. And it just I'm just like, wow.
Yeah, like the thing with Amy Adams that's really interesting is that while Lancaster Dodd seems like the ideal leader, you can almost argue that she's actually the real driving force behind
I agree with that.
Lancaster Dodd and behind the cause, because there are even scenes where like Lancaster Dodd actually does start to exhibit some sort of doubts where he kind of
Or
like changes his mind
weakness,
on certain things.
yes. Or weakness. And she seems to be the one that seems head first and knows
She's the
exactly
most headstrong character, like, out of this entire cult, basically. And it's really interesting that Anderson actually chooses to have one of the followers be the most into the religion than the actual founder of the religion. It actually, like, makes this really compelling dichotomy that I really wasn't expecting. I was just expecting Lancaster Dodd to just be, like, some guy who's just able to smooth it everyone into his point of view, and then you kind of start to see that he kind of like shrivels when he starts to see like some of the things that Freddie Quell begins to exhibit, and it's only like Amy Adams who's able to actually go, no, this is what's right, this is what's right, and I won't take anything else as another point of view.
And the thing with how Paul Thomas Anderson tries to convey that is not very much like it's pointing it out clear as day. It's very much hidden little hints or hidden little clues or just two specific scenes, like the one I just mentioned, and another one that happens to take place in a bathroom that just
Yeah, I wanted to mention that.
kind of catches you off guard, and it really surprises you. But it's just the way she acts and the way the emotions are turned in these scenes that just give this weird feeling that she seems to be a little bit too much into it. And I it just flips her character so quickly that it just throws you for a loop. I don't know. I so much of this movie I'm still kind of speechless on because there's some things that I still don't understand, and I feel like I really need to see a second viewing of it, and I want to see a second viewing of it more so than a lot of movies. I haven't seen a movie that I've wanted to see so much a second time like this, and well, since The Surrogate or The Sessions, but that's for a completely different reason. I just really enjoyed that movie. But this one, I
You
feel like
kind
there's
of need to
so,
take in all the details
I
the
feel like
second
there's so
time.
much under like in the subtext and how dense this movie is. It's very much like a Kubrick. It's very much like a Stanley Kubrick film, and I love that about this. I love movies that feel like I still haven't explored every inch and piece about it just from one viewing, and I feel like I need to see it a second time to get everything. That just shows how meticulous it is, and I love that about it.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, I've seen lots of really wild theories for this movie that you wouldn't even think about. I wouldn't have thought of any of those things at first thought, but when you actually read them, like, anything like actually starts to really make sense because of it's kind of ironic how like the more specific a movie gets, the more appeal it has over like every single thing, and the more it starts to become about basically everything. Just
Because
the more specific it
it's
gets.
fascinating because you feel like you know everything about a movie until someone brings up something that you might not have realized, and then it just opens up this whole new horizon of possibilities that you might not have even come across against. Like for one thing that I read about this last night that I didn't even think about from someone that saw it a second time, and it's not a spoiler at all, I don't feel, but there's a mention earlier on in the movie. I don't remember the specific quote that Amy Adams says something along the lines of how Lancaster Dodd hates certain things or doesn't agree or doesn't like to be with certain things, and one of those includes ex-wives. And then someone brings up the idea that Laura Dern, who plays a woman that brings him into her house and kind of holds them in her house as kind of like this temporary shelter so he can bring people in and spread his faith with and stuff like that. And it never came across to me that she could have been his ex-wife until these certain scenes where he or where she comes up to him and she kind of questions some changes that he made and certain guidelines regarding the cause and everything, and he just like lashes back at her with this immense force, like he's like straight yelling at her, and he never acts like that when it comes to other people, but it's specifically with her in this one scene almost gives you everything. It almost just gives away everything regarding that. I never thought of her possibly as an ex-wife. I just thought of her as a very like loyal follower.
I
Did that ever
wow.
come across to you?
That didn't come across to me.
Yeah.
Jesus. I mean, yeah, there's like many different ways that you could think about. I mean, two of my favorite interpretations that I found on the internet. One was I forgot who it was that said it, but like you could find Rotten Tomatoes, but one person actually said that the whole movie is actually a critique on 1950s culture. And about how like there was always this idealism and how like that idealism started to like kind of crash down. Like I'm probably butchering the phrasing, but you could find it on Rotten Tomatoes somewhere, I bet.
I remember you saying it was something like it was like a metaphor of like the 1950s post-war, and
Yeah, post-war culture.
I kind of disagree with that. I don't feel like that's necessarily maybe
That's not what it's mainly about
if,
you, but you can definitely see that. You can definitely
there's bits
see
of it I
certain
can see
things
up
about it.
but yeah.
But my main one that I really liked was actually from a guy who I have a strong love-hate relationship with, and that's Devin Faraci of Badass Digest. He actually called the movie a sad love story between basically Freddie Quell and Lancaster Dodd, and that if you think about it, there's some homoerotic tension going on between the two.
There definitely is a little bit, especially towards the end of the movie, but that's another feeling, that's another theory where I kind of feel like that's I don't agree with it fully, but I definitely can see where people are coming from it, which is just it just shows how much this movie has like so many possibilities and how people can interpret it in so many different ways.
And the thing is, like, a love story doesn't need to, like, automatically mean, like, homoeroticism. But the thing is, like, one thing, like, I did this Paul Thomas Anderson retrospective on the CineFect blog, which you can read. And one thing that I noticed in almost every single Paul Thomas Anderson movie, all of them except Punch Drunk Love, they all have a very specific theme of father figures and the relationships they have with their sons. And the whole. The follower and the leader dynamic that Freddie Quell and Lancaster Daw have is very similar to a father-son type of relationship, as similar as it is to like a master and a dog type of relationship. And that can also like kind of refer to a love story if you think about it.
Yes. And
So.
it's interesting. And I mean, there's very instances and very like little cues, especially like without giving away the context of it, but let's say the one scene when they're still at Laura Dern's house and then Freddie Quells is walking up to the steps and Lancaster Dodd comes down the steps and he's like patting the ground, acting like he's like a dog or something like that, and they just start like wrestling all over the ground. It's little things like that that give you those hints. And I
Yeah,
like
and
that because they don't, it doesn't explain everything on face value. I like that it kind of it
everything's
asks of the
implied.
viewer to think. It's very implied, yeah. And it asks of the viewer to try to think of this. But it's not wholly ambiguous where you can't piece together anything without some kind of like extensive research or something like that. It definitely is a very open-ended movie, but I feel like there's enough there that can still interest somebody.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a movie that was like too ambiguous for its own good, and
Yeah.
I'm
I
thinking
mean, I could say Tree of Life, but it's so different. That's why if I was thinking of a movie,
that's way different
yeah. And if I was
because
like I was thinking of earlier saying this, but I kind of changed my thought of it of how like, okay, I haven't seen a movie this dense since I don't know when. And I was ready to think of Tree of Life, but it's such a completely different kind of
it's a completely
density.
different type
Yeah.
of density because that one
Yeah.
is more like free flowing. Even though that movie is also very meticulous, it's also more
It's
like
just
very
fr
free
it's very
flowing and stream of
philosophical.
consciousness
Yeah.
and philosophical. Whereas this one is more intellectual and logical, and the Tree of Life is more emotional and
But
existential.
back to some like specific things was that Regarding Paul Thomas Anderson's past work, I had never thought that he would be able to be close to topping the drug deal scene in Boogie Nights, which I feel is one of the greatest scenes, one of the craziest, one of the best orchestrated scenes ever put to film. I've never thought that anything would be close to topping that, because that was, aside from Boogie Nights being very much like very other different directors, like he's taking from it, that felt like something that he created out of his, just something purely genius that he created. I never thought anything was going to be close to topping that, but the processing thing that we brought up earlier between just this interview between Philip Seymour Hoffman and Joaquin Phoenix, brilliant,
Knock me
amazing.
on my ass. It's
It's
insane.
insane. I know. It's just a scene where the camera's just focusing on
There's
Joaquin
really like
Phoenix
no background
as,
music. There's
yeah.
no stylistic
It's all
touches.
quiet.
It's just two men talking to each other, and just the performances are that good.
And it's just the camera's focusing on Joaquin Phoenix's face as Philip Seymour Hoffman just keeps giving him these questions. Some of them just constantly repetitive questions. But it's just all Joaquin Phoenix reacting to those questions and him internally and what he's thinking internally without actually speaking it or saying through some kind of dialogue. But you read it all in his face and
And the
he
most
just reacts
insane
accordingly.
part about that sequence is how Lancaster actually tells him that he's not allowed to blink throughout the whole thing, otherwise he'll repeat it again. And you actually like, and the thing is, it's all in practically one take. Almost all of it is one take. So you actually like start to see like Joaquin Phoenix literally is holding his face and not blinking through this whole scene, which is
And
incredible.
if I remember correctly, I think he starts to cry right at the end, which is the
Yeah.
moment I was like, wow. Like that's got to be the scene they show at the Academy Awards. I hope.
Yeah, I mean,
I hope that's the scene that
I
happens
feel
rolling.
like acting classes are going to be improvising and taking from this scene for years to come. Just like any aspiring actor, just like how they'll reenact Shakespeare, they'll probably reenact this scene.
It's just it's and it's hard for me to just describe it like this because I don't feel like I'm giving it enough justice because it's insane how intense it feels and how engaging it is just from just having a camera sit just on one guy and it meanders on for a good couple minutes it seems where he's just constantly asking him questions but it feels like it's just building up and building up and building up in intensity and it's just this release of emotions once you see that tear rolling down his face and they just stop the interview it's incredible how he staged that. It's, ugh. I
It's like the
that
best
was the moment I
plays.
knew I loved this movie. That was the moment I knew that this was a
Instant
something to
classic,
behold.
basically.
Yeah, because I knew that, like I was saying before, that like all the movie leading up to it, right before he gets onto the boat, I felt like I was liking it. I was really enjoying it, but I wasn't loving it. But once he meets Lancaster Dodd and they have this chemistry and this. It's just like once they meet, sparks just come out of the movie. It just instantly starts going on a roll, and it never stalls or stops in that moment. And then once it gets to that scene, loves it instantly. Amazing.
Yeah, and
Can't describe it in hyperbole enough. Ugh.
yeah, like the best one word that the two of us came up with when we reacted to the movie was the word hypnotic.
It's very
And
hypnotic.
yeah, and I feel like that's kind of intentional considering hypnotherapy is one of the primary things that is used throughout the processing process of the cause, basically. And just like so many little touches like that that you could like just find. And I have a feeling that 25 years from now, we'll still be finding just like new little things from this movie that just like.
Which definitely one example of why I felt like this movie was so hypnotic, and I know you can understand this. It was, and this isn't a spoiler at all either, is it's the scene where Joaquin Phoenix is told to go back and forth in a living
In a
room
room.
between a pane of glass, a window, and a wall, and just a wooden wall. And he's supposed to go back and forth, feel the surface, and then describe to them what he's
I honestly
feeling.
thought that scene was very terrifying. Like,
Yeah,
because I
it's
said in my
weird.
Martha Marcy May Marlene thing, they said that, like, changing who a person is as an individual, like, changing that aspect of them terrifies me. And seeing that just play right in front of your eyes, just as he's just walking back and forth, and It's honestly like some of the most unnerving stuff I've seen this year.
I can agree because that scene does so much to me on so many different levels, and I still don't fully understand it because the way he keeps going back to it is hypnotic because it's going back between that and various other tests that they're taking with Joaquin Phoenix. Whereas he's still describing this stuff and it feels like it's meandering. It's going on for a little while. You don't know how long it's going. You don't know how much time has passed, let alone the fact that on the surface, slowly, this could purely describe the cause. Just this one scene could describe it in just one little thing, or even Scientology as well, as how it just slowly hammers down at a person's psyche and a person's mentality, and it's just breaking him down mentally as he's going back and forth. And it's speechless. It shows so much in just this one little scene. Just so much is happening, yet it seems like it's so little. And I'm
We can't gush
speechless now.
enough.
I'm losing
It's that
words. I'm
good.
losing words right now. It's just so good. It does so much for me. Oh my God.
Yeah, and one
And
last
still.
thing. One of my favorite things out of any movie, and I always wait for this for any movie to surprise me with this, it's what I like to call the perfect final shot. And it's when you're experiencing a movie and it reaches this point where you're thinking, if the movie ends on this shot, it is perfect. And then it ends with that shot, and they would show either the title card or directed by, and you just applaud it and you go, "You done it, man. You've done it, whoever it was on the screen, you've done it." And it's just like that perfect moment, and a lot of Paul Thomas Anderson's movies have that perfect final shot, such as like Mark Wahlberg's gigantic cock in Boogie Nights, and there is also in
There will be
Magnolia,
blood, the I'm
there's,
finished, or I'm
yeah, there
finished
will be
with
blood, I'm
Daniel
finished. And
Lewis, yeah.
one that's really underrated is in Magnolia, where one of the characters just looks at the camera as an Amy Mann song is playing, and then it just cuts to credits. And one that you still haven't seen as well is Heart 8, and that's another final shot that like it takes you off guard, unlike his other stuff. But I still feel like after thinking about it, it's pretty perfect as well. And this one, there were two shots where you thought that it could have been the perfect final shot, and I agree. And one involves a motorcycle, and it doesn't end there. But then the actual final shot, I don't really want to give away, because, we just want to give people the sense of discovery of actually seeing the final shot. But it's really incredible.
I really just want to see it again because I'm still kind of fighting back and forth with which one I prefer because I really would have loved it if it ended on the bike with him driving on it. I even sitting in the theater, I was just kind of like, if it ends here, I will love this. And then it keeps going. And then I wasn't really fully satisfied, but then I really still loved that final shot and the scene leading right up to it. I'm just not sure which one I like more, or if I feel like one would have been better if it ended that way or not.
We'll
I
never
just need to
know.
see it again, but they're both great final shots. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, my personal interpretation of it is that it's a movie that's kind of about ideals and how, like, we'll always strive for a certain ideal, and how the whole movie's about the fact that we'll most likely never ever reach up to the normal ideals that we set up for ourselves, like always being happy or always like finding a soulmate and stuff like that, or always being like driven with God and whatnot. And then you see him just like in the final shot, he's I don't want to give away, but he's embracing something. And even though like it's something that's artificial and facile, like it's still something that he can actually grasp. And that thing where he prefers something he grasps over an actual ideal is just very heartbreaking. And I just love this movie to death. It's fan-fucking-tastic.
I did too.
And
We'll
like you
see. We'll
said,
see how
I'm
it
trying
is.
to decide between,
That
I
a
think
theater.
you said you were trying to decide between whether you like this or The Sessions more.
Yeah, I still am right now.
And I'm kind of suffering
I
through like a similar thing through like this and Beasts of the Southern Wild, and I think we both have a similar thing. Because The Master is a head movie. It's all about intelligence and meticulousness. And movies like The Sessions, which I haven't seen, but I can probably tell, and Beasts of the Southern Wild, both of those are heart movies that are driven by, emotion and, just making you feel either very good or very, like, inspiring about yourself. And it's kind of hard to pick which is which because they're both perfect at their own thing, basically.
Yes, and they're very different. They're very different from each other, and I mean, I'll end up deciding it towards the end of the year.
Yeah,
There's
I have a
definitely still a
feeling we
lot of other stuff I'm
take
interested in
away
seeing.
from The Master more in like 25 years or so. But at the same time, like when I saw Beasts of the Southern Wild at the theater, that knocked me on my ass and everything. So
I'm
it's
just kind
hard
of,
to.
I think. I think there is a weight that has been lifted off of me because The Master was my most excited film of the year. Nothing else could go anywhere near it. So I feel like a weight has been lifted off of me now that I could just kind of go throughout the rest of the year and just, look forward to the other movies that I'm still excited for, but have this like antsy anticipation leading off to you,
Who knows? Maybe.
especially when something as lofty as this actually delivered for me, thankfully.
Yeah, and who knows? What if, like, my most anticipated movie of the year, Cloud Atlas, actually ends up topping Beasts of the Southern Wild as my, like, personal heart movie of the year? I
And
mean,
we'll
who
see.
knows?
I mean, I might end up having a different favorite film of the year, but I don't want to decide. I don't want to decide yet. I'm just gonna wait till it comes out, or till all the other stuff comes out. But
But so far, yeah,
still a
this one's
career ahead of us.
definitely in our. Probably going to be in
It's
our top fives, top threes even.
yeah, top two, top one. Who knows? We'll see.
And most likely top twos. You heard it from me first. We pretty much agree wholeheartedly. The Master is a masterpiece. No pun intended.
Yes. Need to see it again. I'm dying.
I definitely want to see it again, especially since it's playing at a local theater.
I thought you were going to today. Oh, I
I was
forgot.
going to. This leads to that funny story of mine that I was going to tell you.
I thought your funny story was going to be about Dread.
It's about Dread and the Master. Like, both of them fall into this, but should I tell you it now, or should we wait until once we're finished recording?
Sure, go with it now. You've already started your
Oh boy,
leaving
let's
your
do
hang.
this. I mean, I don't want to tantalize viewers and then leave them hanging, so we'll give them what they want. Basically, the plan was I was gonna see End of Watch first, which, by the way, End of Watch is very good. Check it out. I recommend it. But we were going to see End of Watch first, and then after that, I was gonna go with my mom to see The Master. And apparently, she got the times mixed up. It turned out The Master was starting an hour after the first movie finished. So we were thinking we could either wait long enough to see The Master, or we could go see a movie that's playing earlier. And we saw Dread was playing earlier, so I'm like, ooh. We could see that. Cool. So what happens that the thing is Dread was still playing like much later though, whereas The Master was starting at 4:50, Dread was starting at 4:35. So we decided to like just wait outside of the Dread theater in case we changed our minds. And we were thinking, oh, what, maybe we'll just sneak into The Master if we want to. But then one of our neighbors went into the screen for Dread and was like, hey, are you going in? And we were basically cornered from there. We ended up having to go into the theater for Dread. So we step inside the theater for Dread, and our neighbor is there and whatnot. And we decide to like go up near the top, like we always do. And then like the trailers are starting, and we realize, oh, there's actually a lot of trailers for horror movies. And we realize that a lot of teenage girls have went into the screening. So I was thinking, huh, I wonder why a lot of teenage girls are interested in Dread.
Oh
Exactly. You see where this
no.
is going, right?
It just hit me.
Yeah, exactly. So, huh, what could this be? It turns out the thing is we were waiting outside the theater, but we were like the thing is it was a big theater. Like there was a
I already know the
staircase
movie
leading
he
to a
went
higher
into,
level.
so I that's why I figured it out, but you can continue.
Like it was a big theater, so like while we were outside the screen, we weren't fully outside. So I think I figured out that while we were waiting outside, there were some other people who were changing the sign for what movie was playing, and it turned out something else was playing instead of Dread. And it turned out the movie that was playing was House at the End of the Street, starring Jennifer Lawrence of The Hunger Games. And I was like, oh no, what are we doing? And then mom was like, no, but our neighbors are over there and whatnot. And then we would have to explain it once it was over and whatnot. And we were like, yeah, we might as well stay, I
I
guess.
mean,
We're already inside.
that's not too bad. You could have explained, oh, I thought this was for one movie and we meant to go see that movie, not this one.
It
Probably would
was like an episode of Seinfeld. It felt a lot like that. Like, I'm terrible at that. It was
I
that
find that
sort of
funny.
situation where it's
Like
just,
it would be something
how
where
about that?
you're talking about seeing Dredd, the camera's on you guys, you walk in,
It's just
and
a
then
lot of misunderstanding.
the camera pans up and the title thing switches
And then
to
all of a
"House
sudden it
in
goes
the Street."
boom, 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 doo, 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 doo. Like that, exactly.
Exactly. That's funny. That was worth it. That was worth the story.
Just you reacting to like, oh God, and you figured it out.
Yeah, it was fun.
That was priceless.
Okay, so now that we've talked about our movies and we're finished, what is exciting about next week, and what are
Oh boy,
you
next
looking
week's
forward to?
exciting because of motherfucking Looper.
Looper, and then something else that I don't remember off the top of
Oh,
my
here.
head.
I'll look it up right now. Hold up.
Because Looper looks really exciting, because it's the new Rian Johnson film. There are new Rian Johnson sci-fi film with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis happens to be, or Joseph Gordon-Levitt happens to be basically a contract hitman in the future, and he is assigned to kill people that are teleported into the future and
From
then
the future
kill
in the
or
past.
this now I'm getting confused. I'm getting myself confused now.
Time travel's always confusing.
I
Don't beat
know.
yourself over it.
He has to kill people from the past that are tele or that are transported into the future so that they don't have to deal with their future selves and they can eliminate the problem before it even happens. However, Joseph Gordon-Levitt finds out that his former self has been transported into the future and he has to kill his former self, who happens to be Bruce Willis. Or wait, no,
Hold on.
I'm getting
Yeah, you
confused
got it
again.
wrong. See?
I'm getting confused again.
It's like
Wait.
people from the future being teleported into the past or the present or whatever, basically. Which explains why Bruce Willis, the older self, was teleported into Joseph Gordon-Levitt's time.
God
But
damn,
yeah,
time
that's
traveling, confused as
time
shit.
travel.
But yeah,
Yeah, fantastic premise. Very creative use of
it's
time travel.
getting very good word of mouth. People are really loving it. Can't wait to see it. Rian Johnson had a little bit of help from Shane Carruth or Shane Carruth.
Who
I
made
don't know how you pronounce
Primer?
his last name.
And
Who
even
made
though
Primer?
I'm one of the few people that thinks Primer's kind of overrated, there's no denying that Primer is one of the most intelligent movies ever made.
It's a pretty high-fi. It's a pretty heady sci-fi film.
It's like very, very like scientifically researched sort of time travel, where it seems almost like science fact rather than science fiction, that sort of time travel.
It's something that when you're watching it seems like it's so technologically sound that it could definitely happen, and you're surprised it hasn't yet. Yeah.
Yeah, so he
So.
got him to work with the screenplay and whatnot, so that should be pretty cool. Because I personally think Shane Carruth just wasn't that good as a filmmaker, whereas Rian Johnson is good as a filmmaker. Therefore, I have higher hopes with this.
So yes, very excited to see that, and I was just
The
looking up.
other movie coming out is actually Hotel Transylvania, the
Yeah,
animated
which is
Jim Tarkovsky.
despite appearing to get some kind of middling reviews right now, I always have faith in Genndy Tartakovsky and will always check out whatever he's doing.
Basically, he's
So
the guy who
I'm looking forward to
did
trying it.
Dexter's Lab, Powerpuff Girls, those
And
shows.
Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends and
Oh,
stuff like
did he
that.
do that? Oh, I fucking love
Yes.
that show.
And I believe he directed the Powerpuff Girls movie, which if I remember, I also liked that one, and it felt a lot different compared to the series, but a lot more serious. But I'm looking forward to Hotel Transylvania. It looks very kiddie, it looks very silly, but I'm hoping to at least have a good time from it.
There is the fact that Adam Sandler is a Dracula in that movie.
I don't even mind that because I feel like Genndy should be able to direct him well, and it should be able to work. So we'll see how it turns out. I'm willing to try it, even if it gets bad reviews. I'm willing to try it. So,
I'll admit, I'm an Adam Sandler apologist just because I've grown up with those Happy Madison movies, and also because Punch Drunk
hey,
Love,
I'm
one
pretty
of my
similar.
favorite
Yeah,
movies ever.
he's got to be able to crank out something good again.
Yeah. Who
If he
knows?
was just
Maybe this could be it. This could be the
maybe
thing
he
that
was
picks him
just a
back up from his grown-ups slump, his Jack and Jill slump.
And I still admittedly like Click,
I
even if
like
it's it
many
tries
parts
very
of Click.
hard.
I like many parts of Click.
It tries very hard to get some emotions out of you, somewhat successfully, somewhat.
So yeah, those are the two main releases though. Looper, Hotel Transylvania. Exciting.
Very excited. I didn't even.
Hopefully we'll actually get through, like, we'll make this weekly again.
I was originally expecting for the Master to come out in October, because that's what everybody was predicting it to. But thankfully, over its seven screenings throughout the country, it did the best opening weekend per theater average, I believe.
Yeah, thankfully they moved it back up while the hype was just getting started.
So yeah, now that it did really well in just those seven screens, it like opened up wide almost immediately, and now I got to see it. Very glad I did. I thought I was originally have to wait 2 weeks of boredom of nothing, Uber, and now I only have to wait 1 week. Hooray for me.
Sweetness.
I know, sweet, I know.
Hooray for people who actually have taste, actually giving money to stuff that deserves it. Yay!
Hey. All right, so
Is it link time?
this is time to wrap it up. Yes, it
Okay
is.
then. We have a website. It's cinefectpodcast.blogspot.com. But you know what I was actually thinking? I was thinking that, like, the thing with our original URL, cinefectpodcast.blogspot.com, it's too wordy. And the thing is, Blogspot is, like, kind of archaic. I mean, a lot of people still use it, but it's still, like,
It's fairly
mostly.
archaic, yeah.
Yeah. And the thing
Get with
is,
the times.
we can't use cinefect.blogspot.com because someone else took it, which is why we had to add podcasts at the end. And as you can see, the podcast part was kind of dwindling for a while. So I was actually kind of thinking about moving it to WordPress because there's actually a function where you could transfer all your posts from Blogspot to a WordPress,
Cool.
which.
I don't really know too much of the difference between Blogspot and WordPress.
WordPress is much
I'm
more
a WordPress.
advanced. It's almost like it's an actual website creator. It's definitely more advanced than Blogspot. I'm
So,
thinking about that, so if.
do you have to have the cinefect.wordpress.com or cinefectblogcast.wordpress.com?
Well, it depends
Do
on
you
if
have to
you
have the
want to
dot
pay
WordPress?
or not. And, you know, I can't pay, so. But still, cinefect.wordpress.com will be much easier to spell out than cinefectpodcast.blogspot.com.
Yes.
So if you go to cinefectpodcast.blogspot.com and you realize that doesn't work anymore,
Oh, that's a word mouth. That's a
try
mouthful.
going
A word
to
mouth.
just try going to cinefect.wordpress.com and see if that works. And if that works, that it probably means we've moved there. So
Okay.
I'm thinking about that. It, like, I don't know when I'll do it, but I know it'll probably happen sometime.
Soon,
And
trademark. Yeah.
we also are on iTunes. We can subscribe to the podcast through there, and we have Twitters. Where can we find you on the interwebs, Alex?
You can find me at twitter.com/tbbucks20, capital TBB, lowercase UCS20.
All
Number
right, and you can find me at my new Twitter username, twitter.com/CGRunyon. That's CGRUNYON. So I guess that's it.
That
Next week,
is it.
hopefully next week, we'll be talking
Hopefully.
about Looper and some other stuff. You'll hopefully talk about some Borderlands and Torchlight.
Yeah.
Excited to hear about.
Which I'm just slowly sinking my teeth into. They're both really big games. Yeah.
Yep. And that should be a pretty good show if it ever happens. And I hope it does.
I hope so too.
So I'm Chris.
I'm Alex.
And we'll see you guys next time.
We were waltzing together to a dreamy melody when they called out, "Change partners," and you waltzed away from me. Now my arms feel so as I gaze around the floor, and I keep on changing partners till I hold you once more. Though we danced for one moment, and too soon we had to part. That one I gaze around the floor and I keep on changing partners till I hold you once more. Change partners.